this week, nothing but green appeared across the financial markets, with gold, silver, and related shares near record highs, and U.S. equities rebounded from sell-off lows. Well, welcome back, everyone. Chris Waltzek here with you. Another big show on this muy grande-sized April 13th episode. Bill Murphy from GATA returns with big news for gold and silver investors. According to the World Gold Council, gold has reached its peak production in 2017, suggesting lower output might just be what's needed to send us to 1,500 in 2018. And my guest thinks that might just be an understatement. Plus, Peter Grandich with his latest take on the precious metals sector. We discuss the increasing trade barrier issues between the West and China, as well as the Shanghai gold-backed yuan petro futures exchange and the implications for the U.S. dollar and perhaps gold. And you know, as Yogi Berra said, you can observe a lot just by watching. Well, similarly, you can watch the U.S. debt clock soar past $21 trillion. And the discussion also turns to Seth Klarman, who just advised his clients to increase cash levels in their investment portfolios. Warren Buffett said this about Seth Klarman: he is the person he would choose to manage his portfolio. Clive Mound outlines a compelling case for a big silver advance. And of course, both of my guests are expecting big things for silver, but particularly Bill Murphy. And then we open up the listener Q&A hotline. Three more guests with all kinds of comments on silver. And as you might guess, Bitcoin, which also had an enormous week, up 30%. And speaking of Bitcoin, I still have some miners left. So if you would like to have one of these miners still in the manufacturer's box, the top S9 terahash miners, selling for around $1,400 still on Amazon, sometimes higher, between $1,400 and $2,400, I am virtually giving one away to the first two or three 10-year subscribers on the Alpha Stocks newsletter. So if you'd like to support the show, have a 10-year subscription to our 8-year newsletter and pick up a miner sent directly to your house, this might be the time to do it, because it's only for this weekend. So just send me a message, or you can sign up at any of our web pages for the 10-year subscription. Of course, there will be some small fees included, shipping and things like that. So first come, first serve. We'd like to field your questions and comments. You can call into the Q&A hotline, 641-715-3900, followed by extension number 514049. That number again, 641-715-3900. Please jot it down and punch it right into your phone if you like, or just put it on a post-it pad near the phone. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, with your questions and comments. Remember, this is a U.S. tax weekend, and the good news this year is, since it falls on a Saturday, they're giving us until Tuesday. That's the cutoff date, Tuesday the 17th, April 17th. So be sure and give Uncle Sam all of his paperwork and dues. Robert Ian wraps up the show with yet another Bring All the Runners Across Home Plate Grand Slam episode. GoldSeek.com radio begins now with the market weather recap. Visibility was virtually unlimited this week over the precious metals sector on growing concerns of a military conflict in Syria between the West and Russia, as well as renewed fears of a global trade war with China. The world's best inflation safe haven added $11, just shy of 1%, finishing at $13.47 an ounce, holding firmly still above support. Meanwhile, silver picked up about 30 cents, 2%, ending at around $16.65, while the XAU precious metal shares gained $2.5 at $84.08 and breaking out of a one-year-long trading range. But it was black gold that really impressed, adding over $5, nearly 9% for the week at $67.40 a barrel. West Texas Intermediate, a new multi-year record high, well above consolidation support. And the weekly chart is still showing a golden cross. This is just about as good as it gets, especially when we look at the CRB index, which had another explosive week at the top of its range. This looks like it could be it for precious metals, and the commodities sector. A nascent bull market across the board, and just when things couldn't get any better, the Bitcoin ETF GBTC Bitcoin Investment Trust added $3 up to $13.52, almost 30%, as the sector found support in anticipation, probably, of tax refund purchases. The top story affecting the markets, investors increased safe haven buying on the heels of news of a possible airstrike on Syria by U.S. and allies following a suspected chemical weapons attack on civilians, which incidentally many reports are suggesting that was a false report coming from a former diplomat in the U.K. The decision is expected later this weekend, and the conflict directly impacts Russia, which is protecting the President Bashar al-Assad's forces throughout the country. Rumors of potential for U.S. airstrikes continued throughout the week following a warning to Russia to prepare for a missile attack from a tweet, that is, from the White House. In related news, the tensions with China also increased between the White House with plans for new tariffs that will impact potentially Chinese technology investments in the U.S., according to the Wall Street Journal. And the White House noted potential plans to join the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which would again put further pressure on our largest trade partner. But one really has to wonder whether or not this makes much sense, given that so many U.S. multinationals moved to China in order to lower their costs and expenses and boost profits here in the United States. It seems as though this might backfire. There might be some unintended blowback. So we'll just have to watch this situation closely. Precious metals, bottom line, and Bitcoin. Well, investors just couldn't get enough of the CRB commodity sector, as you probably heard in my voice, especially black gold, on grave inflation concerns stemming from the Fed meeting minutes, which were released this week, as well as the increased tensions that I mentioned between the West, Russia, and Syria. Some investors are concerned that this Cold War could shift very quickly to a warm war if Russia is forced to defend its position in Syria. Even though India's gold imports fell, you know, the GDX precious metal shares are very well positioned in a technical standpoint to launch into the stratosphere, and so is gold. On the Bitcoin front, the big crypto supporter Tim Draper in Silicon Valley noted he will make a positive announcement on tax day, falls next week. The 30% rally this week is certainly impressive, and it'll be interesting to see if investors use their tax return funds to buy these discounted cryptos. And moving on to the Wall Street Report, sunny skies returned over the New York Stock Exchange on news from the Fed of an extremely robust outlook on economic growth. Strong growth increases consumption, which boosts corporate profits along with share prices. Plus, April is a seasonably solid month for U.S. shares as tax refund checks pour into portfolios, boosting demand. By Friday's close, the Dow added 427 points, almost 2%, closing over that 24,000 psychological support level at 24,360. And the S&P picked up 52 points, 2%, closing at 26,56, while the NASDAQ added 2.7%, up nearly 200, finishing at 7,106. The CBOE Volatility Index also declined sharply to 1,742. In related news, the oldest Dow component, General Electric Company, GE ticker, up 2.4%, finishing around 1,350, along with Warren Buffett favorite, Coca-Cola, KO, adding 1%, and then U.S. Petroleum Company Behemoth, Exxon Mobil Company, XOM, added about 1%, finishing at 77.80, according to one online source. The top performers in the S&P 500 included Alaska Air Group, ALK, was up 6%, F5 Networks, FFIV, added 5%, and Concho Resources, CXO, gained 3%. Meanwhile, top performers in the NASDAQ, Future FinTech Group, FTFT, added 27%. Turtle Beach, HEAR, was up 27% as well. And Burcon NutraScience Corp, BUR, gained 18%. The Federal Reserve meeting minutes late Wednesday, combined with hawkish comments in a speech from a policymaker on Friday, suggest growing concerns over very strong economic growth and rising inflation that could lead to U.S. interest rate hikes The current Fed funds futures suggest policymakers will skip a rate hike at the next meeting scheduled for May, but instead increase rates. It's showing a 99.5% odds at the June meeting, and probably once again in either November or December. All of the Fed governors indicated a hawkish stance at the last meeting. U.S. shares bottom line. Well, as though on cue, the market did rebound this week, as suggested in the last report. The current technical picture improved with the 7 indicator greed to fear index pendulum holding in the extremely fearful category, a positive event from a contrarian perspective. Shares are trading within a very broad trading pattern. However, one key proviso, if the saber rattling by the U.S. gets out of hand and missiles start to fly, expect volatility to explode. Coming up after the break, more Gold Seek Radio. Welcome back, Peter Grandage.
Always a pleasure to be with you.
One of the top stories, the debut of China's first yuan-denominated crude futures in the last week or so. The hype around this has been building, I think you might agree, for the last couple of years. I mean, this idea of a threat to the petrodollar, which has essentially remained intact since World War II. Officials there claim that this is just an attempt to circumvent issues that they see in the world. Do you view this as an actual threat to national sovereignty, or at least to U.S. dollar hegemony?
It's clearly a major to the U.S. dollar, and I think it's one of many things that are unfolding. We continue to see not only China, but Russia and others to move away from the dollar as the choice currency. We also continue to see, particularly Russia and China, continue to greatly build up their gold reserves. Many feel it will eventually move to a point where it will be some sort of new semi-backed or fully backed gold, a new world currency, again, to move away from the dollar. In fact, the trade war stuff that's going on, I think, is only going to accelerate that move and want China to make maybe even happen faster than it was originally targeted. So yes, I think while not big news to the don't worry, be happy crowd, that certainly was an important peg in an overall changing wheel of international currencies. And so I think it is something that we need to look out long term and expect to see more things like that come out of China, Asia, Russia, and some other areas of the world.
Especially in the BRIC nations, we have to have crude oil imports. China is arguably the second largest. They're our number one trade partner, but they're having difficulty transacting in crude oil, and it essentially just gives, I guess, a vehicle. For instance, let's say there's a country that's receiving huge sanctions. They can finance their oil imports and whatnot. So how do you think this might impact the precious metals markets? Do you see a correlation there at all?
Two countries which at the moment the United States seem to have the most heightened tension with, keep big countries, Russia and China, continue to greatly build up their gold holdings. And I just ask everybody, why are they doing it? Are we smarter than them, meaning here in America, that we find most Americans still totally void of any gold holdings? I think it's obviously the reverse. I also think that part of the oil trade is to avoid having to take on more U.S. dollars. A lot of it comes from the hard asset crowd, but there seems to be more and more of a voice coming from the large institutional investors around the world that the United States has a lot of problems, and one of it is its currencies. And that's why when people expected the dollar to be rip-roaring to the upside here these last 6 to 12 months, in fact, it's been flat to down, has made those people, you know, even more so concerned that there are a lot of issues. Is it down to the local retail financial guy or gal and the local person? No, they're still caught up in the happy tales that are told, you know, by the talking heads on major financial networks. But people that know and understand what big money is doing sees this as a continuing move away from the United States as, you know, the number one economic power and its currency, eventually not the world's resource currency.
I think you make some great points there. And Peter Schiff, as well as Dr. Stephen Lieb, have sort of echoed your sentiments. And we're patriots here. We care very deeply about the concepts that were put in place, the Bill of Rights, the Constitution, the original founders' ideas. What we are upset about is the way that this has become, at least apparently, corrupted. And so I need to throw that proviso in there before I say that what I
believe you have outlined here very well. In the West, we have embraced this concept of debt, have swallowed it hook, line, and sinker. I remember we started the show over 12 years ago, and we hoped that we could spread the message of sound money, a monetary system on which you could really build or rebuild a nation. What we're doing here in the West is doubling down on debt. But China and Russia, as you noted, we have incredible tensions against, are building up massive stockpiles of gold and now silver, of course, in Moscow, building up huge silver supplies. This is a new trend, by the way, in central banks, appear to be following the successful playbook that was in place well over 100 years ago, especially at the turn of the last century. If you work hard, you have a huge savings rate of at least 15 to 20, 25%, and you build a future for your family and for your nation. Unfortunately, as many of my guests I mentioned have said here in the past, we've fallen into this trap that almost every, you know, reserve currency nation embraces. Eventually, that implodes, that whole concept. Can you tell us how that might happen here?
One of the things I don't think is being discussed here at the moment as the trade talk wars heats up and has gripped the markets these last, you know, few weeks, and that is, yeah, sure, China doesn't do everything legit. I don't think the United States does either trading, but what we don't speak about here in America is that a lot of what we are importing from them that's causing the great imbalances are a lot of things we don't actually need to day-to-day life. They're excesses. They're things that we're willing to go, as you noted, into serious debt in order to have. America doesn't want to look at itself for that, and yet the evidence is what I've argued as about as long as you've been on, that you're continuing to see America go down the wrong path by just seeing how many new public storage facilities are opening up. 1 in 11 people now in America have something stored at a storage facility. And yes, some of those people are using it for work or in between moving and all, but a lot of it is just too much stuff. A lot of that stuff has been bought on borrowed money. The United States has lived, you know, in my career, you know, I entered the brokerage business way back in 84. We were the world's largest creditor nation. Now we're basically, you know, done a 180. All these things and may not impact us today or tomorrow, but it's a tipping point, and there's just more and more weight is putting on the other side of the scale. And it's kind of like that when we were kids on that seesaw, when finally enough weight or some extra on the back of the seesaw jumps on and you just shoot straight up. And then that's where I think the United States has gotten itself into. So the debt issue is a big problem. And in my work, which is mostly planning and estate planning and retirement planning, most people don't want to hear about less is more. Most people don't want to hear about, you know, lowering two or three levels their spending in order to come comparable to their income. And that's how the United States has been going. For every dollar we take in, we create two or three more dollars of debt, and debt binge that's getting to the point where I think you could argue not only will we not be able to eventually pay back all this debt, but any significant rise in rates and or a continuing increase to the debt level, we're going to have trouble starting just to service the interest payments. So there's a lot of bad things out there. You know, you just touched on a couple of them right now.
Firstly, we're already struggling servicing debt levels, $21 trillion. I remember there was a time in the past when we were actually turning back the debt dial, but it seems like that was in the late 1990s. Everyone was excited by that event. Now we're accelerating by over $1 trillion a year. So it is an enormous unpayable sum. Now, you, having been in this industry so long, probably familiar with, considered one of the best money managers out there, his best-selling book actually is out of print and sells regularly for thousands of dollars online. We give a free digital copy away to our subscribers and friends of the show. Seth Klarman told people to raise cash levels in the year 2000. Again, in 2007, he was ridiculed again in 2007. And in fact, his business, money management business, suffered terribly during these periods simply because people couldn't fathom why in the world would anyone do that, and he ended up outperforming virtually everyone else and the markets for years. Well, he's raised cash levels again, as you might expect.
I, for one, I no longer manage money, but I still give my observations to our clientele, and I began at the beginning of the year stating that whatever your holdings were in 2017, minimally should be 50% less than general equities, and as much as 90% if you're particularly going to need that principal in the next few years, because I expected a, you know, substantial end to this, you know, euphoria that ran through the financial markets for several years. And there was a danger that if things get out of hand, that there could be substantial losses as well, and fairly quick. So I concur. I'm glad to be proven wrong, but I don't see any reason to expect any substantial rise in general equities. In fact, the things we're just discussing now here, just starting the second quarter of 2018, already are accelerating the longer list of things that are problems that finally at least some are listening to. You know, just earlier this week, Chris, you know, we tested some of the most key moving averages that just at the beginning of the year, no one suspected we would even come close to. And it was logical to bounce off them, because usually long-term moving averages are not broken, at least for once or twice or sometimes three or four times they're tested. I think the other thing that you know, that in this past week, the most recently as we speak today, the retraction of the so-called greater growth that everybody thought we had on the employment side just 2 months ago. I mean, a 50,000 negative adjustment and then a very low, you know, 100,000 and, you know, and change increase. I think the employment game run-up is over too. So everywhere you look, it's hard. And if I wanted to be bullish, to make a justification for it, other than take what I've always coined the don't worry, happy attitude, and that is, at, you know, if they throw you off the top of the Empire State Building all the way down, you say the same thing, hey, so far, so good. I just don't see anything logical to support substantially higher general equity prices anytime in the near or intermediate future.
Moving on to the precious metal sector, clearly gold is very well positioned, at least from a technical vantage point, the best for substantial gains. Top pundits looking for 1,400. We want to clear that level before moving on to a retest the 2011 bull market highs. Do you take the view that we're looking at a continuation of the year 2000-2001 of the original gold bull market, or will this be a new bull market, and what do you think that will portend for precious metals aficionados?
You know, hindsight always is 2020, and we'll be able to state that if and when those of us who think it's gone substantially higher are right, and then we can point, we'll see it actually began there. What I do concur a lot with what you just said is that technical aspects of gold, I think, are really impressive. You know, it was, I think, around December of the 2016, you can correct me, but I think we bottomed somewhere around 1120, 1125. And then basically throughout 2017, we just started to make higher lows. First, I think we went down to test 1200. Then the 1250 area became, you know, we didn't get break below that. And now we've spent the last few months where we didn't break 1300. All the while, each time we rallied back to that 1350, 1375 area. To me, that's just a spring getting ready. And I can actually talk about a chart even I used a few weeks ago on my blog to show that there's really been a phenomenal 4 year base building period for gold. And it's true, you know, when 1375 and then 1400 get taken out, I think gold runs up several hundred dollars, and believe it or not, the longer we trade in this space and then do that, the better the run-up will be. I think that there are a lot of fundamental reasons to own it, and then when you combine it with technical pictures that look as they do, I'm very, very comfortable, and I don't represent it. I have my fifth year now of not, have no involvements with mining companies. I only own two stocks myself. The rest is in gold and cash, quite frankly. I'm just truly a third-party observer in this. You know, someone took the people I love and people I care for and said, pick the one investment that's a major investment that you can look at 1 to 3 to 5 years from now, and it'll just be higher than the others. It'll be gold, and it's not ever going to be on the mainstream radar. It's, in fact, it's always going to be laughed at and scoffed at because it's, you know, it's not going to do real well with financial assets. It's doing real well. And the fact that it even hung in during the last couple of years when the stock market really got just overheated and didn't collapse despite everybody predicting the relic was, you know, about to collapse again, is just another indication to me that the next few years are going to be very good.
Let's talk about gold's shiny cousin, AG, silver, most conductive, most reflective, most useful, and at a price of 80 to 1 on the gold to silver ratio, easiest to procure precious metal. This is obviously dislocation, a disequilibrium, if you will, as economists like to call it. The pendulum there is obviously, relative to gold, swung way beyond an extreme, and perhaps that pendulum could swing back. What that might mean for silver price?
I probably would have to say that I'm not as bullish, but that's just because I'm bullish on gold, and I've always believed that silver did its best once it was pronounced to the world that gold was in a bull market. Then the public and the smaller institutional types get heavily involved in it, and then they take, like you said, it's the cheaper cousin, and it's, you know, people always choose quantity over quality. They rather own 1,000 shares of a dollar stock than 100 shares of a $10 stock. And so I think it needs to have gold break out and be on the front pages again of the financial world, and I think that'll happen when we get above 1,400. I think it has a little bit weaker of a technical picture at the moment, but it's probably closer to a major move than gold because we continue to have lower highs and higher lows in silver, so that trading range is shrinking, and it gets to a point where it either makes then a big move to the upside or downside. And since, because I think gold is going to go higher, I just don't see any way how gold goes higher and silver collapses and vice versa. So I think it will trail gold until gold becomes, you know, in vogue again, so to speak, in the general public, and then I think silver takes over and then it outperforms gold.
I have a slightly different take on it. The president of India, in imposing what I believe to be draconian policies again on his people, you might remember several months ago, I guess it was last year, he simply outlawed some of the lowest currencies, which threw the entire economy into chaos, forcing people in electronic transactions. And then you might say, at the opposite extreme, they just announced that they're outlawing all cryptocurrency wallets, Bitcoin and related currencies. Now, being a fan of Bitcoin, I don't advocate any of this, but what I think is interesting is that it might be setting the stage for a massive gold and silver demand increase, and perhaps might even be the onset or the genesis of the new bull market push, because as we know, Indians have a huge propensity, a huge demand for precious metals, just slightly behind China, many, many thousand year tradition. And now, unfortunately, gold is probably beyond the means of the typical Indian household. And so silver at an 80 to 1 differential presents great opportunities. So again, this is just speculation, and I'm in no way disparaging your comments, but if I were to ask what might help close the jaws, if you will, between that huge 80 to 1 gold to silver ratio, any other markets or any other commentary you'd like to throw in here as we wrap up?
I've taken, you know, an extremely bearish stance personally for those people that still listen, you know, to our blogs and our clients. You know, basically our work is limited to retirement planning and estate planning. I just think, you know, we talked earlier and I meant to get this point out and I'll use it as part of the closing. We talked to you and you brought up clearly the $21 trillion in actual debt, but what Americans don't take into account is our unfunded liabilities. You know, you and I as a business, if we have employees and we owe them money for the future for pension, we have to put money aside, and if we don't, we're cooking the books. America has much more than $21 trillion in unfunded liabilities. There's estimates it could be as high as $100 trillion. And now everybody seems to think that, well, if, you know, somebody has too much debt, they should just be forgiven. I mean, there's even talk now of, you know, writing off student debt loans, you know, which mostly the government holds, and just say, oh, it's too bad these poor kids took on this debt, so let's just, you know, let's not make them have it anymore. You know, that goes to that video that went around a few years ago, and I still use it from time to time, and I always forget the name of the professor. It was during the last election, and he talked about that, you know, America, more and more people getting in the wagon and don't want to pull it anymore. They want somebody else to pull it for them. And it gets to the point where if you don't have enough pullers and you're keep punishing those that are left pulling, you know, who's left to pull? That's, I think, another huge issue that we have here. So my philosophy is very simple, Chris. Less is more. Most Americans need to come down a couple, two, three levels of lifestyle or spending, especially those that have little saved and owe so much, till we're closing, and I have nothing against the industry. I don't think they're dishonest or anything, but until we're closing public storage facilities versus opening them, I think we're going to continue to have the problems that we continue to speak about.
But I think sometimes success can be a hurdle to really understanding the plight of the working and middle classes. And that, of course, historically was the backbone of the American success story. And so I really appreciate it, and I hope listeners try to wrap their minds around your comments. This, I think, will be the only way that the typical household can manage what we see coming. The debt levels are enormous. Credit card debt over $1 trillion. Shocking article this week noting that subprime is now a huge problem.
It's the only thing that kept auto sales going. You know, just real quick, I hated to interrupt you, but you brought up a very good point. It was unheard of 20 years ago that anything passed a four-year loan. Now 5 to 7 year car loans are very common. And one of the reasons is the only way you could get somebody into a new car. And then, of course, once they struggled with that, they had to start coming, you know, with cheap paper again. And everybody goes, well, it's not like a house because they'll just have to give the car back. Well, that's great, but then you have all those cars out there that are used and need to be going somewhere, so people aren't about to run out and buy new cars. So the first place that's going to get hit even before the housing sector is the auto industry, thanks to, you know, what's happened with subprime. It is a very good point to note.
The only other thing I'd just add is that this is going to hit all levels of society, from the affluent all the way down to those under the poverty level. Again, just think of us as financial meteorologists. We don't always hit it on the head. It might be a coin flip, but every now and then there is that rogue wave, that hurricane, that typhoon. And we see storm clouds on the horizon, I think, is the takeaway. All right, Peter Granditz, please tell us more about what we will find when we bookmark petergranditz.com.
Sure. Like I said, the bulk of our business is handling retirement business and estate planning, petergranditz.com. I did go back, not all the way, and not going to go back to all the way I once was, but I did bring back a new blog called Granditz on Markets. I do spend more time talking about the markets, but not as an advisory service, and certainly not anybody that thinks they're going to be able to correctly keep forecasting which way the markets go. And all of that's free at petergranditz.com. That one's called Granditz on Markets, and the other blog is Pete Speaks, and that's everything other than talking about markets that I note there on that blog. Thank you, Chris.
Okay, opening up the listener phone line.
Hi, Chris. This is Tom calling from Arizona. I just wanted to know if you could shed some light on the fact that virtually all the large dealers in the country that I know of are out of silver, yet at the same time, silver price has been plummeting. I don't know if that means that they're just trying to counteract the short sellers out there, the paper shorts, to drive the price back up somehow, or is it because they bought it above the current price and they don't want to sell? I just want to know what you guys think, because it's kind of baffling. I just wanted to know what you thought of the whole situation. Thank you.
First caller, Tom from Arizona, says he's heard that many of the silver dealers might be running low on their stockpiles and wonders why the price remains subdued amid low supply. Well, hi, Tom. First off, make a reference to our dear departed friend, Bob Chapman. He and many of our guests advised listeners to mostly ignore the supply-demand story, focus instead on the long-term price theme and trend. And while I do agree with our friends at Gata.org that the case for price rigging and manipulation is very compelling, as individual investors, we don't want to get, you know, married to a narrative only just to watch the price continue to disappoint for years, even decades. For instance, back in 2011, as gold more than doubled its all-time record peak of 850, blasting to nearly 2,000, calls for 5,000, 10,000 gold were regularly heard in the blogosphere. After all, the official story indicated that inflation since 1980 was about 250%, so we should expect 850 times around 250%, well over $2,400 gold. But there is a flaw in this greed-based thinking. Here's the question I think every investor should try to remind themselves when bubble-like conditions unfold. How will I know that the bubble is over? Let's let that sink in for a minute. How do we really know?
Well, it's pretty easy to tell when a bubble's passed, you know, a few weeks, months, and years later. But how will you know in the middle of a bubble, precisely at the top or near the top? How will you prepare yourself if you don't have a battle plan? Because arbitrary numbers pulled out of thin air, those are dangerous to your portfolio's health and your overall wealth. Case in point, one of my favorite internet gurus has made and lost millions in the market. He shares several hours of what amounts to really a confessions of a market operator, you know, circa 2017. Done and seen it all, wasted 20 years of his life playing video games, spent thousands of dollars mining Bitcoin, building blockchains, trading Bitcoin, futures, options, derivatives, and then lost much of it when it just topped last December at 20,000. He again is warning every investor to simply draw a trend line. Like Ralph Acampora, a good friend of the show, draw a trend line. Here's your support. Above it lies the bull. Below it lies the bear. If the trend is starting to weaken, maybe it's time to hedge or take some profits and diversify some of those profits into undervalued, non-correlated asset classes within the portfolio. So bring this ridiculously long-winded diatribe to a more succinct answer. Here it is in a nutshell. When thinking of any purchase, always ask yourself, is the trend up? And how will I determine when it ends? So turning the spotlight back to the silver market, I would argue that we completed a downtrend in 2015 and built a base in 2016-2017, and we could start a new advance if support holds. I could easily see a run to $28 on the next big move, maybe a bit higher. How will we know if this is wrong? Well, it's easy. If the current support fails, then all bets are off and it's time to look for greener pastures. It reminds me of the brilliant doctor's comments from the must-see documentary classic, A Beautiful Truth. He says, you know, a healthy diet makes plenty of sense. It just doesn't make a lot of dollars for people selling medicines. Similarly, you know, a trend line makes an awful lot of sense. All right, thanks, Tom.
Hey, Chris, how you doing? Giving you a call here. I wanted to get your take on some Bitcoin futures related questions on CME and the CBOE futures. You know, I noticed a small correlation between the price of Bitcoin and the announcement of these things. It seems like November the 21st, when the CME announced that they were going to open the futures market, Bitcoin was around $8,000, and it looks like it had a pretty big run-up all the way till around December the 18th, whenever the contract started, all the way up to $20,000. And since then, we've seen a party sell-off all the way back down to the 11,000 mark. Oddly enough, the CBOE futures came to an end on January the 17th. Bitcoin was around $9,000. And it looks like the CME futures are going to expire tomorrow, and we're sitting around $11,000. Wondering what your thoughts about this. I'm hoping we're going to see an explosive move to the upside, but didn't know if you thought they had any correlation. A lot of people say that the futures don't really affect the Bitcoin market, but I don't see why these deep pockets can't come onto the Bitcoin market and buy up Bitcoin leading up to the futures and then just dump on the market, leaving everybody wondering what happened. Hope you're doing well. Thanks again for everything you do.
The next caller asks about a correlation between the run-up in Bitcoin following the announcement of a Bitcoin futures contract on the CBOE and the subsequent sell-off. Well, caller, you know, I've checked the Thinkorswim platform on the TD Ameritrade futures account. Trading was incredibly thin around that time of the sell-off. Plus, some of the top traders, experts in the Bitcoin field, share my thoughts that the most likely reason for the BTC advance and crash was due to liquidity issues combined with seasonal factors. So you might recall, around the December timeframe, most BTC exchanges were turning down hundreds of thousands. Even we saw stories of millions of applications per week turned down. This just shows huge pent-up demand. At one point, Bitfinex accounts were actually put up for sale for several thousand dollars. In addition, you may be aware of the big delays in buying Bitcoin, at least at the time, even on Coinbase. You know, you have to jump through a lot of hurdles, build trust over time. So I suspect that this was a bottleneck situation where the investors simply couldn't find a way to buy Bitcoin. So if you try to use the derivatives argument, the futures argument, you really have to investigate the Bitcoin Bitcoin ETF first, ticker GBTC. You know, the Winklevoss Twins ETF. Now, this has been available for over a year. We got people in around $900. It ran up. If this was really an issue of people just wanting derivatives contracts and things of that nature, I would argue that the ETF would have been disproportionately higher than Bitcoin. And in my opinion, I didn't see many signs of that. I don't see that in the data. Just another indication that I think the entire thesis surrounding the futures market top and manipulation, somewhat suspect. Now, I do suspect, because of this potential bottleneck, that we might see a repeat of the behavior perhaps at the end of this year or next year, as investors and exchanges again start to realize, how can you really have a safe derivatives on a market with only a few thousand Bitcoins outstanding? And price discovery, I still think, is a big issue, because take a look at all of the exchanges around the world. We can see discrepancies and differentials of many thousands of dollars. At one point, we saw South Korea with around a $27,000 Bitcoin. Well, we never really topped much over $20,000 here in the West. So I suspect that futures and options markets in the coming years will be forced to reprice contracts to reflect a much smaller underlying size. Now, here's an example. At one of the few options exchanges online for Bitcoin, contract size is typically one BTC. But as the supply collapses amid institutional demand that is starting to really build, and I expect that to be a big theme in the sector for several years, a fresh new wave of price explosions could occur. However, keep in mind, there are really interesting and compelling blockchains competing for that crypto dinero with incredible functionality, anonymity, so much we could talk about there. That's not the topic here today. That might stifle some demand. We'll really have to let the market price dictate the true value. We've got to look at all the scenarios and keep that in mind.
Yeah, Chris. John here, sunny San Diego. Just a little comment on your interview with Bill Murphy. You asked a rhetorical question. Why would they try to rig such an inelastic market as silver? Of course, we both know, we all know why they are rigging silver, because silver is a monetary metal and it's tied at the hip with gold, and they must keep both suppressed. They can't do one and not do the other. And they will be successful at rigging the market until the physical market trumps them. And that day is fast approaching, in my opinion. If $1 trillion moved into the sector almost virtually overnight because paper assets are blowing up, they will be absolutely powerless to stop the rise in price, because the center of gravity will move from New York and London to Shanghai and other Asian exchanges that perhaps are not yet born, that require the depositing of physical metal before you can trade anything, any paper contract on that exchange. That will be the day that it all ends. Just when that happens, who knows? But just think of this, $1 trillion moving into the market, trying to buy physical. It'll be impossible to stop a price explosion. Thanks for the show.
Next up, longtime listener and commentator. Well, hi, John. You know, I think we covered silver in such detail already with the first caller that I'll spare everyone the trouble of hearing it again. And remember, we want you to record your questions and comments. We have a Q&A hotline. You can call in 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 641-715-3900. You'll need the extension number or the mailbox number, 514049. The number again, 641-715-3900. Please jot it down on a post-it pad or right by your phone or into your mobile phone. And you'll need the mailbox number as well, 514049. Coming up after the break, more Gold Seek Radio. Bill Murphy, regular for over 12 years from the Gold Antitrust Action Committee, got it. Along with Chris Powell, they're exposing gold market manipulation. Since our last discussion just a few weeks ago, Clive Mound, a well-known market technician, just published an article with bullish implications for silver. He sees the COT in the most favorable position, he says, ever, and that this could be an epic move in silver. I see, at least in the midterm, a bit more of neutral, but he's looking long-term at a massive inverted head and shoulders. Have you seen his recent article?
This is my Mark, this is a tough day to talk to me because I'm outraged again about the gold cartel and to never deal with what's going on here. Regarding, first of all, what Clive's talking about, yes, there's never been a bigger short position by certain number of the specs and least short by the so-called commercials, which is the J.P. Morgan gold cartel gang. But that was out 2 weeks ago, most of all, and everybody went nuts about it, and it was a big dud. Silver went down 25 cents. Now it's come out again as of last Friday, and same thing, except it was even more bullish. And this time and there wasn't much talk about it, so this time we did rally. But today you go up right to the 1675, 1680 resistance that's been there for months, and the gold cartel attacks again. Gold, for the fourth time in 6 months, goes up to 1365 and then drops $20. I mean, this thing is getting more farcical every month that goes on, and it will blow up, but it is another day of smiles to frown, smiles to outrage. It's just absurd what we're dealing with here, and doesn't matter what else goes on out there, period. It's all about the gold cartel, and getting back to what Clive has to say, yes, theoretically, it's very bullish. They won't let it move. It's just like, theoretically, J.P. Morgan's big physical position should be very bullish. It's been the most bearish thing I've seen in 2 years. They just stick it out there and the price goes nowhere.
Last week, we heard from the Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell pretty dovish comments at the Economic Club of Chicago. He noted that they might be patient on their approach to raising rates, and we're certainly starting to see some really inflationary numbers develop and pop up in domestic wages. We saw an increase of 8 cents, 3/10 of a percent to $26.82 an hour, 12-month increase in pay. So it would seem as though the situation hasn't quite developed yet for an explosive move, but when we look at the big picture of paper assets relative to commodities, wouldn't you agree that there seems to be an incredible value opportunity?
Well, I'm prejudiced, but I've never seen a better risk-reward situation in gold and silver ever of all time. Right now, first of all, we should never be down at these ridiculously low price levels. It's only because of the gold cartel has forced it down there. And what is going on in the markets with this exchange for physical situation is historic. It suggests something is terribly wrong in the gold market. The silver open interest just went all-time highs, even though the price is at these pitifully low levels. It is just, there's something very wrong with the silver market. I think it will blow up. And quite frankly, I think that's, for me, and I'm just speaking for myself, is the key issue. None of this stuff matters, and one day it's all going to matter, and the gold and silver markets are going to blow up and just go berserk.
Well, I think that's what Clive Mound did a great job sort of encapsulating. First, he did look at some of the fundamentals, but the impressive head and shoulders pattern forming. I mean, frankly, that's what turned me on to silver and gold and XAU back around the year 2000, 2001. There was that XAU inverted head and shoulders. He's showing the same thing for silver. And I'd also like to talk about comments from the World Gold Council that gold production topped out last year. If you combine that along with the inflationary pressures building, insatiable appetite for paper assets, he's talking about a potential move to 1500 in the next few months.
Well, he's a smart guy, and, 1,500 we certainly like to see. You've got to get above 1,360, 1,365 first, but it's all in the cards. And I don't know. My opinion is that we're not going to have any more bull markets in the sense like when you first got involved and we saw in the beginning of the century and so on. It's just going to explode, and it'll come out of nowhere, and all these things that have been so bullish for so many years now that have meant nothing, all will coagulate, and off we go. And again, getting back to silver and Clive, I mean, what they're doing in silver price relative to gold is beyond absurd. It is just mind-boggling, and it's going to be something that's going to be very favorable for those people that hang in there that don't get shook out. But they're doing their best to try to shake people out.
You know, we're starting to see central bankers around the world, all the way from Venezuela, just show a new interest in, building their stockpiles of precious metals and commodities, do anything they can to get rid of fiat currency. Do you think that China might pull its nuclear option and start to sell off its multi-trillion dollar stockpile? I think it's something like, well, maybe not multi-trillion, but 1.4 trillion in U.S. treasuries. And what might be the implications for the market?
Well, that kind of thing's been threatened for years. And I think the most important thing Chinese government is money, power, and control, and to keep their things in a positive situation and growing the way they have done for decades now. getting to the point where at some point they're going to be challenging the United States in terms of economic issues, the way they're growing, and they want to keep that in motion. And you know, they'll threat here and there, and most of these threats never amount to anything. And I can't imagine them roiling the U.S. in that regard, because they would know what. We would know that right away if they did it to any degree. I mean, I don't mean just a minor threat. So I don't see them doing any of this stuff, but can it be easily wrong?
Gold Money Research Director Alistair McLeod recently penned an article noting why the U.S. dollar could be on the verge of a collapse. While I do think we're probably, you know, short-term oversold in the greenback, look at the big picture, the multi-week, multi-month, multi-year fractal view of it. Certainly looks like we could be on the cusp of retesting the lows that led the precious metals to one of the greatest bull markets in that market's history. Do you see tougher times ahead for the dollar?
Well, I certainly would like to see that. Give gold and silver a lift, and there, you know, you certainly can make a case for the dollar getting hurt, you know, quite a bit. And of course, all the currencies stink. It's just a question of, you know, which is the worst of the lot. But it's of interesting of late the way, until recently, the interest rates in the U.S. have been moving higher, and the dollar has been moving lower. And it's been very kind of gradual and so on, but it stands out that something isn't right for the dollar. So I wouldn't be surprised to see it just get slaughtered at some point here.
We've seen the Fed's balance sheet increase at a almost exponential pace at certain times, especially since the year 2009. And when you juxtapose the S&P 500 against their balance sheet, you know, it certainly seems to echo or mirror the advance we've seen in U.S. equities. Now that Fed officials and other policymakers at the ECB and others are telegraphing their intentions to pull back on toxic debt purchases and lower their balance sheet levels, do you think that might impact equities, and could that then turn some of the money flows into the precious metals?
It's just so difficult, because it's hard to imagine the United States getting out of its dilemma in terms of debt and all this sort of thing without, you know, gutting the money numbers again. And, of course, that could mean, you know, big numbers for, you know, gold and silver on the upside, which should be happening anyway. So it's hard to know what they're going to do. You know, they bluff so much, and they talk a game and this or that, and as soon as things turn in the markets or in the economy, they go the other way. And you can't put much stock in what they say, because they can turn on a dime based on current events.
Maybe we should wrap up this idea of the petro-yuan, you know, which is gold back. I mean, record demand right out of the starting gate about a week or two ago. Obviously, there's an awful lot of conjecture that this will slowly erode demand for the U.S. dollar as a reserve currency. I mean, we're all patriotic. We don't want to lose our dollar hegemony. But at the same time, I mean, we all know it's inevitable. So maybe preparation is sort of like putting on the siren ahead of a tornado. And I just can't see a safe haven that hasn't been run up in price. U.S. stocks look like a potential bubble, you know, in the months ahead, certainly by the end of the year, and even housing. Many reports from San Francisco, Toronto, Montreal, other areas on the East Coast, that maybe the echo bubble is nearing its end, as we've eclipsed on the S&P Case-Shiller Index levels we saw back at 2005, 2006. Some people sounding the alarm there. Do you see a 2007, 2008 deflationary scare before we make the big run higher? I mean, could we see something like that that throws these markets, all the markets, into chaos?
You know, obviously, there's two ways to look at it, what's coming. And all I know is gold and silver are the cheapest assets on the planet. It's been so frustrating these past years to watch, as you're talking about, other assets have taken off all over the place. You name an asset, it's gone up. Gold and silver, they just, you know, stayed in the weeds. And I just think that they are going to explode out of nowhere, and I've said it before, and I'm going to keep saying it, because that's what I think is going to happen. And I think, regardless of what else goes on, people that are long the gold and silver markets right now are going to finally be happy campers before this year's out. But it has been one of a long struggle.
I don't know if you saw this article, but it looks like Venezuela President Nicolas Maduro just knocked three zeros off of its currency, off the ailing bolivar. That's amid hyperinflation. It's just crippling the nation with record unemployment, rampant starvation, and this all occurred in just the blink of an eye, in just over a year, year and a half. At one point, the bolivar not too far from parity with the U.S. dollar. And then suddenly, anyone who had a single gold coin could buy a neighborhood. Is it too far-fetched to assume that we could also have something similar here in North America? Or do you think our officials would simply keep burning the dollar and pull out all the stops to avoid hyperinflation?
Doing now, Chris, that's the reason gold and silver have struggled these past years. They're doing everything they can via this, what I call the gold cartel, to prevent the gold and silver prices from reflecting what's going on in other markets and what they're doing in the money arena and everything else. And that's why I think, compared to Venezuela, yes, you're going to see a gold and silver price explosion out of nowhere. In a similar term that you're talking about Venezuela, all of a sudden, you know, having these, you know, incredible difficulties, and you said in a blink of an eye, over their financial situation. And that's what's going to happen in our world, and it's been put off.
Exactly, and you know, the worst part of it is, although we're seeing record unemployment at 17-year lows, at least at recent numbers, at the same time, I mean, if you really look behind the numbers, it seems to me that the working middle classes are struggling terribly, working multiple jobs. It's almost an Uber economy, a gig economy, I think some are referring to it, where gone are the years where you started with the company out of school, you know, retired with a gold watch. Add to the mix the fact that millennials have the highest debt levels in history, and we're seeing, you know, subprime auto loans implode at record numbers, over $1 trillion, student loan defaults skyrocketing. It just seems to me like we could have sort of a stag inflationary situation that might even rival the 70s.
I think it makes sense. I had to make a bet. I bet with you on that one. And as I said, I've made some my comments today on what I think gold and silver are going to do, why, how, and when, in the sense of just exploding out of nowhere, and it all fits. It's just very frustrating to deal with it on days like this when you finally have a chance for something to change, and the same gold cartel, the same, you know, bullion banks and U.S. government just says, no, stop it. And this is just adding to the pressure in these markets to just explode out of nowhere, where we're not going to have the bull markets of the past. It's just going to go berserk.
Would you then also agree that maybe the typical household really needs to cut back on consumption, start preparing right now for very difficult times ahead, or is that just too negative?
Well, the problem is the little guy in America, so-called, is having us struggling while the rich and the elitist have just, you know, they couldn't give their money away by the time they died. I mean, they got so much of it. And the difference between those two is staggering and getting worse, as you mentioned. And that's the real problem, is that the trickle-down effect isn't working. That's going to cause a big problem.
Back to the precious metals. Just keep our eyes on gold, wouldn't you agree? Because the XAU perked up last week, and gold still is in a pretty solid consolidation.
The shares have continuing to lag. The HUI got some momentum today above 180 and started to take off, and they tried to shut everything down again. All I can say is all this is going to pay off, in my opinion. I'm frustrated dealing with it because it's gone on far too long. And it's so many bullish things. There's so many bullish fundamentals. And the only reason gold and silver are not sharply higher right now is the gold cartel. And they are going to blow up. The physical markets are going to have to, you know, just take them out. And when that happens, you're going to have a price explosion because the bad guys won't be able to do anything about it. Until then, we're going to have days like today when gold drops $20 off its high. Gee, a political sensation of earlier in the day. It lasted about a few hours. So I just think that's all going to change, and we have a lot of excitement coming.
Please tell people more about La Metropole Cafe and Gatta.
They can sign up for a 2-week free trial if they like, see if it's of interest. And then my colleague, Chris Powell, just got back from Asia, did a great job over there on behalf of Gatta. They can go to www.gatta.org and see if what he puts out is of interest.
Thank you, Bill Murphy.
Thank you, Chris. Anytime.
This is Robert Ian with GoldSeek.com Radio. A disturbing meme is making its way into the mainstream media vernacular with more and more frequency. That meme is in response to the growing actions of the special counsel, inspector general, and other political officials. The meme in question? Constitutional crisis. The implication of which sets the stage to potentially lead to a constitutional convention. Here's how I summarized my August 11th, 2017 GoldSeek commentary. I said we need to resist at all costs any discussion of a constitutional convention.
We already have enough tools, enough laws, and enough know-how to solve any problem we currently face. What we lack are leaders with discipline who are willing to be accountable for their actions. If there ever is a constitutional convention, just see who tries to meddle with and dismantle the structural supports of what it is that truly makes America great. Our elected officials and those hidden hierarchies of power that control them are not mature enough to handle a constitutional convention. A constitutional convention would be the ultimate coup d'etat that America cannot afford. As you listen to the talking heads on television, begin to take notice of who uses and how often the term constitutional crisis as it is slipped into the discussion. The term is never really defined or followed up on yet. We're simply told the never-ending rhetoric is what defines it. Now is the time to push back on such rhetoric. Ask people who use such language to define it and what they are actually proposing by using such explosive words. By analogy, physical gold and silver in your possession function as both money and an asset without counterparty risk. The opposite of that is paper gold, which some experts have suggested can represent up to 300 or more ounces of leverage for every ounce of real gold that underpins such contracts. In a financial crisis, paper gold can deleverage, potentially causing 299 out of every 300 ounces sold to default. Imagine the chaos as holders of every 300 contracts start fighting for the same ounce of gold over and over again. In this scenario, paper gold is a weak asset. But when can something made out of paper be a strong asset or the preferred asset? In the voting booth. Just as it's critical to avoid at all costs any push for a constitutional convention, it is equally important to push for a return to paper ballots everywhere, sealed under lock and key, no exceptions. But what if someone says, hey, we've corrected the problems with electronic voting, or we have a blockchain voting system ready to go? Great. Let's use them, but with a hard paper backup. When it comes to voting, paper is an asset that cannot be replaced. It can be augmented, but not replaced. The 18 years that have ensued since the introduction of electronic voting, following the 2000 presidential race between George Bush Jr. and Al Gore, paved the way for the challenges that dominate today's news nonstop. The Constitution and paper ballots are true paper assets. The Constitution is supposed to be hard to amend because it forces accountability. Paper ballots are harder to manipulate than anything electronic. Just like physical gold forces financial accountability, the original paper constitution and actual paper ballots force political accountability. Political and economic accountability must be maintained and restored, no matter how inconvenient we are told such practices may be. And until next time, this is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com. Thanks, Chris.
Okay, Robert, thanks for another excellent installment. Well, that wraps up this week's GoldSeek.com radio episode. For two new big guests, be sure to check out next week's show. Until we talk to you again, have a great week.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.